This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi there, my name's Davina. I live in the UK in Cambridgeshire. I came across Over the Influence while scrolling through podcasts looking for a sober or alcohol-free, just needed some inspiration, and I'm so glad I came across Ben and Shazza. We're due to meet up in June. There are about 30 of us from OTI, and we're going to be walking the Yorkshire Three Peaks. I can't wait to meet everybody in person. Yeah, connection is key. There are Zooms every week, weekly Zooms. Give it a go. You won't regret it.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Here we are again, episode 2, season 3 of Over the Influence. And this series, it's all about you, this series. It's all about your stories. And I hope you don't mind me saying this about our next guest. Ordinary people doing extraordinary things. Really, really inspiring stuff. Now, full disclosure here, we're going to welcome Andrew and Johnny Dickin to the podcast. They've got a book out, which we'll talk about towards the end of our chat, which is called My Basketful of Happiness. So there's a picture on the front of this book, right? And I looked at it and I thought, isn't that a nice father and son photo? Let me tell you, it's taken me 3 months for the penny to drop. It's Andrew before and after drinking. I thought that handsome devil, that must be his son. It's not! Welcome, Andrew and Johnny.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, thanks for having us.
I loved you before then, but now I love you even more.
I'm really, really embarrassed. I am so embarrassed, and I just thought, what a complete plank.
Well, I'm waiting for my compliments next, because, I mean, you've gone straight in on my dad. I'm hoping that at some point I'll get some as well.
You'll have to wait, Johnny. You'll have to wait.
Fantastic.
So, we've got two of you on the podcast today, Andrew and Johnny Dickin. Johnny, you are Andrew's son. You've written a book together, which you have done through the course of lockdown. Before we talk about that and the process of doing that and the story, Andrew, let's just start with you. Introduce yourself to us. Tell us who you are, where you're from. And this always sounds like a bit of a blind date intro. Just ignore that.
Well, thanks very much for that introduction, Sian. That was amazing. Thank you so much. My name is Andrew Dickin. I'm from Barn Alswick in Lancashire. I'm essentially a painter and decorator, work for myself, and just over 3 years ago I decided to call time on alcohol, and I'm living the absolute dream now, which was hard to imagine, but I am living the dream. So I don't know much else to say about that, Sharon, but
well, let's go back then. You're living the dream now.
Yeah.
Prior to that, was it a nightmare?
Well, no, because I was a good drunk. I've been a fantastic drunk. I've been a world champion drunk. You know, I've won all the prizes, all the awards. And I used to say to lads at the beginning, when I first gave up drinking, I said, look, it's your turn now. You take over. I'm retired. I've done. You start to look a bit of a fool when you get too old to carry on playing these games and walking around town on Christmas Day when you can't stand up, Christmas parties. And so I just retired. I just thought, it's time to retire. And I gave up. Initially, for financial reasons, I'd bankrupt myself, and no one else's responsibility, me on my own. I hold total responsibility for everything that I've ever done. And that's been a really big thing for me, actually, responsibility. But there's levels of things you want to get, you know, you want to get health back on track. But the financial thing was a thing. And since doing that, I've become a multimillionaire. No, I haven't.
I wish.
Where I am at the moment is just fabulous, really, really great, and yeah, so that's me.
Lovely, fantastic intro. Johnny, you're here on this recording of Over the Influence. You are Andrew's son. Lovely to meet you, by the way.
Andrew,
nearly as handsome as your dad.
Well, I don't know about that.
Just introduce yourself to us, Johnny. Just tell us a bit about yourself.
So my name's Johnny. I am unfortunately Andrew's son. No, I take back unfortunately. I've never been a writer before. I've always wanted to write a book. I've started many and finished none, apart from this one that obviously we did finish this year. And yeah, I'm a music obsessive. I work in the entertainment industry for a ticket outlet, so you know, music is pretty much everything for me. So it's funny actually, because I'm not like someone who doesn't drink myself. I mean, I very rarely drink, but being in that industry, you know, you're sort of surrounded by it all the time. You know, playing in bands and stuff, you're sort of expected to drink. And I think sometimes people are surprised, like when we turn up to play gigs and like, oh, I'll get you a beer, and I'm like, oh, I'll just have a water, please. So yeah, that's something that I've sort of always been around, and I think, having seen my dad and seen what my dad's gone through, I don't know whether that's sort of subconsciously had that effect on me to the point where I didn't really want to do it, or whether I just never picked up that gene from him to begin with, you know. So, yeah, that's my intro for what it's worth.
It's great to meet you guys. And firstly, hello to Shaz. And my name's Freddie. I'm your co-host that you're supposed to introduce at the start of the podcast. But don't worry about that.
Oh, that's
See, I told you, I get it wrong week on week. Well, what an absolute
I didn't want to interrupt because it was going so well. Guys, it is awesome to meet you both, and I think it's such an interesting story because it's about you guys, it's not about me. But when I was growing up, I certainly came from a household where, you know, my dad was a very heavy drinker, and I was brought up just thinking that was the normal. It was normal to get through a few bottles of wine every night. It was normal to, you know, to get drunk every weekend. And my dad actually encouraged my drinking as well. And Johnny, I'd love to know from your point of view, what was it like growing up? And when did you reach that point when you just thought, hang on, maybe my dad's taking it one step further than other dads potentially?
Well, it's funny. It's something I do say in the early chapters of the book. But essentially, as a kid, I kind of just assumed that that's what dads did. You know, it was like I didn't think of it as anything strange. And I think I was quite far into my teens before I actually realised that there was an issue. And I think by then I'd already started to drink myself. You know, like going out with friends when I turned 18, we'd be out every single weekend. But then it became apparent when I were coming home from those nights out or whatever, and my dad would be asleep on the floor or asleep on the sofa. And obviously I'd seen that all my life because that was what he did. And again, that's what I thought was normal. But then when I realised I was coming home after having a few drinks and being with friends and getting myself to bed, and I thought maybe he's going just a little bit too far at that point. He's gone past the point of enjoyment. He's now just, you know, asleep on the floor, T-shirt ridden up, snoring his head off. Mum's gone to bed. She's left the wine bottles out so that he can see what he's left behind him. And I started to think, yeah, maybe that is an issue. And then I think the penny really started to drop when it got to the point where, you know, he was like, he would ask me and my brother for £20 to go to the shop to get some wine in because he hadn't been paid that day, but he had to make sure that he had it. And at that point it was like, yeah, there's a reliance here, he has to have that. So I'd say probably around 16-17 that I started to notice these things.
Andrew, listening to that, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's quite emotional really, isn't it? It's a strange thing because you don't think when you're doing it, you just think you're a great guy and you're good fun and you've got no bad, you're not a bad drunk, you're not you know, you're very selfish, aren't you? And it's like, leave me alone. I'm only enjoying myself. What's wrong with you lot? Well, you know, if you speak to my pals, they'll all tell you the same. I'm great. It's just me being me. And so if you know, example, Sharon, is Christine once said to me, I'm leaving you. I'm done. This, you know, this ain't going on. And I'd said to her as well, let's get an Indian takeaway. Let's get some wine and some beer. That was just my excuse. If I could get Christine into the idea of having an Indian takeaway, it meant I could get a drink. I didn't want an Indian takeaway. I wanted a legitimate reason to buy what went with it. Takeaway was just a bonus. So it was just all about getting the beer and the wine in and the crisps and the nuts and the chocolate and the sweets. So I said to her, I said, what are you going to do? You're going to leave me because of that. I said, how stupid are you going to look when you walk out that door? And what are you going to say people. I've left him because he wanted an Indian takeaway and wine and beer. And you know what's sad about that is most people would probably have agreed with me. And now when I look back, I think, flipping out, that's terrible. I really, really am so grateful for everybody standing by me and sticking by me, because I thought, because people admired my ability to behave like an idiot. So if I'd have said I was quitting drink, you're joking, you can't leave us. What are you doing? Where are you going? We need you, kind of thing. And the only people that really needed me are my wife and my kids and my mum.
As well as forgetting to introduce Freddie, I also forgot to introduce our podcast producer, Ben. I apologise. Ben, you've got a question.
I think, Andrew, before we started recording, you said the phrase that you gave up because you were backed into a corner with your drinking. Would you mind if I ask, how dark was that corner?
You can ask me anything you want, Ben. I think for a few years I got where I was frightened of how drunk I was getting and what I was incapable of doing. To this extent, once I mentioned Christmas do there, I once remember we'd had a brilliant day and then it just got absolutely ridiculous. And I just walked home from the Indian that we were sat in uptown. I didn't even say goodbye. I just walked home. And all the way home, I kept thinking, I'm going to die on this walk home. This is absolutely terrifying. What on earth have I done to myself? I'm going to fall in the canal. I'm just going to die. And I got so, and I'd never been like that. All I ever did was laugh all the way home. So for the last few years, it just got absolutely ridiculous it just got.
But there was also, sorry to interrupt you, Dad. Obviously the blood pressure level to it as well, where obviously you were still trying to be fit and active and you're going out on ridiculously long bike rides when that were putting yourself at such risk, even though you thought, oh, I'm being healthy because I'm doing that. Because you'd done so much damage to yourself, that was the worst thing you could be doing, because you were pushing your body to limits that it couldn't handle because of what you'd done.
Well, I was a total extremist. I did everything to extreme. Now, I think I'm 56 in June. I genuinely think I'm the fittest I've ever been. I can go on a bike ride tomorrow and go up any hill you want me to go up, and it's not a problem. I go to the gym 3 times a week. We're into walking. I feel absolutely amazing. And now I don't do anything to excess. I do everything in moderation and consistency. And what Freddie was on about getting up early, that's me. I'm off 4 or 5 o'clock. I'm up spinning on a bike, go for a walk. So I've got a good few hours before I go to work. And so I'm a time thief these days. I'm pinching time. You know, every day starts at 12 o'clock. I'm happy to give up 4 or 5 hours of that day, but I want to be up as early as I possibly can be to have as much of that day of but just the extreme thing. I've an example, get Johnny laughing. He knows I'm waffling. I'll give you an example, Ben, where I was at. Sorry, Sharon, I'm Freddie. One Friday night, Christine said to me, my basket full of happiness was created years ago, because that's what I used to call it. I'm just going to get my basket full of happiness, you know. And so Christine rang me, she said, I'm going to be a bit late tonight. You don't mind, you know, if I'm not in well about 6:30, 7 o'clock. And I'm thinking, oh, fantastic, this is great. I'm on my own. I'm going solo. And when I used to go to the cooperative in Barnoldsey Co., the shop, when I got my basket, I was like, hey, you all right? And I were talking to everyone. How are you doing? Have you had a good year? It's been good, hasn't it? Oh, what a lovely. I was so excited when I was buying that. I could have bought that basket contents blindfolded. I knew where everything were. I knew where the nuts were, the chocolates were, the sweets were, the crisps. I knew everything. Beer, wine. Look at a bottle of wine, 12.5%. Put that back. That's no good. 13. That'll do. We're into that. We're getting there now. You know, anything above 5% lager, anything above 13% wine, we were talking. And I went to the court one Friday night and I bought a pizza, one of the special pizzas they sell. I bought some coleslaw, a tub of coleslaw, some jelly beans, 2 bags of nuts, dry roasted and salted, and a bar of chocolate, 4 pint cans of Stella and a bottle of red wine. Got home, so happy. I can't even begin to tell you. This is like Christmas Day. Get through the door, oven's on immediately. Split the bags of the nuts. I used to share, I used to split them and mix them, the salted and the dry roasted. Beer, bang. First pint of Stella down. And touch the sides, that's gone. There's no one in to watch me. It's great. I've got probably either, there's only one Jimmy Grimble, Cemetery Junction, or any of the Taken films ready for me go-to drinking films, ready in the DVD player. No one's in. Whatever the film was, I think it was actually Taken for the millionth time. And cut a long story short, I looked at the clock at 5:30 and I started, and at 6:35, it had all gone. Every single bit of that basket were gone. And I think Christine hadn't even come on. I thought, oh my God, I've done it all. No wonder I'm full. No wonder I'm bloated. No wonder I want. And so within an hour, I've gone from this absolutely excited kid running around so happy to ultimate depression of what have I just done to myself? And then anxiety and depression kicking in. And it was, and then I do that on Saturday, and then I did it on Sunday. Then on Monday night, I'm at K08 class at West Craven Sports Centre, pushing myself for 45 minutes, thinking I were a big-time player because I'm sweating so much. I used to sweat when I were training like a boxer does on a Saturday night when they're in the ring. I used to envy these boxers all sweating. And I'm sweating, thinking I were fit. I don't sweat now, apart from when I'm doing this. and that was the pattern of what I was like. I was just an absolute animal. I just did everything to excess. But with what you were saying there, Ben, I try not to think about, I look back and laugh about my experiences with drinking. I don't try to go down the, I don't spend too much time thinking about the bad times because that gets me down and I've done that. I can't do anything about it. So I try to keep away from depression. I've suffered with enough depression. I realise that depression's from yesterday. Anxiety's not happened yet. So for me, I've got to steer clear of yesterday, especially if it was bad, because I'm going to get depressed and I don't want to, and so I don't really, I mean, being in court with Christopher, my eldest son, when we had his house repossessed, that's probably one of the most mind-blowing experiences ever. The news was so surreal. I'm nearly passing out listening to this. Never been in trouble with the law, never been in a fight. And I'm in court having my house repossessed. And it was my fault. No one else's. My fault. No point in blame at customers who haven't paid me bills, because there were quite a few of those, but that's my fault. And the second I started to accept total responsibility for everything, I moved on massively quick. It really was a... So there's loads of dark places, Ben, but I try to keep out of the dark room because the room that I'm in now is so bright. Hey, that was very... How do you think of that,
I like
one, Johnny?
I love it. I love a little phrase or two. So many things to unpack there, Andrew, but I fully agree, by the way, and a lot of what you said resonated with me, and I think a lot of people who want to change their relationship with alcohol do have that kind of all or nothing, go hard, go home, extreme mindset. And the question I wanted to ask is how you dealt with that personality change, because I know, and to pick up on something that you mentioned right at the start, you know, that persona of being like the drunken legend. And how did you sort of do that shift between the heavy drinking, heavy exercise legend to the person that you are now?
Well, I think when I gave up drinking, the fear of giving up was incredible. And I listened to Craig Beck's book on an audio, and the 30 seconds thing where you can push it back 30 seconds to re-listen because you've missed a bit. I did that for so many times because I kept... Oh, Christmas. Hang on a minute. Just pause that there. Just what am I going to do about that? Well, hang on a minute. What about him? Oh, I can't. This is no. This I can't do this. And I kept thinking, well, I have to do it. And so then I kept thinking about good times that I'd drinking. And so the whole of this week when I'm quitting, it was an absolute monster fear battle about no, can't do this. Yes, I can do this. No, I can't. And I just accepted that I'm going to do it and it's going to be boring and I just have to accept it being boring. I had no idea that within 12 months I was going to hit this weird high, what like was uncontrollable. I hit a high after 12 months, which It was like in, I listened to Abraham Hicks, which is Esther Hicks's, I don't know if you've ever heard of Abraham Hicks, Esther Hicks, she's absolutely incredible. And I listened to that and they go into this vortex thing. And I got myself so into these motivational speakers that I finished up in this such a high. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. Christine was worried about me. I kept thinking, just what's going on? I'm so high, I can't tell you. And that, it was bizarre. And then after that 12, I just dropped a slight. I dropped slightly. But I think it was a realization that my mind had opened up to the fact that, hang on a minute, I can have anything I want now. I can be anything I want. I can do anything I want. Has everybody else got this? Was it just me, or am I imagining this? And once I got used to the fact that you can have what you want, you can be what you want, you can go on 3 or 4 different holidays every year without even having to sell your dog. You can actually, it just blew my mind, Freddie, that I'd gone so far from, and you think you're in a bubble, you think this bubble is going to burst. I can't, this life cannot be this good for me. Never mind without a drink. It's just so fantastic. But it's all a result of one thing, which is stopping drinking. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I hope I've answered your question there for me.
No, absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah.
Thank
Johnny,
you
must be incredibly proud listening to your dad. Obviously, when Freddie, you know, asked you to talk about growing up as a child with a drinking dad, you know, he's to say he's turned it around is an understatement. You must be chuffed to bits.
I am incredibly proud, and you know, if I weren't, I wouldn't have written this book with him, you know. And it's like, it really does inspire me. Like, I mean, you've got to look up to your parents, haven't you? It's your role models, and it's hard to do when you're coming home from work, you know, because I used to work in bars, ironically. And when you're coming home from serving people alcohol all night to find your dad passed out on the floor, it's really hard to have pride. And I did. I had pride and admiration for other things. I mean, if it wasn't for my dad, I wouldn't play music. I wouldn't be a music obsessive like I said I was. It's all down to my dad and my taste in comedy. And, you know, everything comes from him and my mum as well, of course. But the one thing that I didn't ever take from him was the drinking thing. So now that he doesn't do that, I can really take pride in that. And I can say, oh, well, I don't really drink that much. And I can see the benefits that it's given to my dad. So it's and not only that, it's also a case of, like, if I think, oh, that I really want to do this, say, for example, writing a book, but that's a lot of hard work, can I really do it? And then I think, well, my dad gave up drinking after doing it for his entire adult life. I never thought he'd do it, and he did it. So if he can do that, surely I can do whatever I put my mind to. So it inspires me all the time. Like, every day, it inspires me.
I have to say, today is a really, really important day. When I went bankrupt, when I lost the sale of possession of my house, I had to find £30,000. I had a £5,000 tax bill and I'd got to find £30,000 and I had nothing. I had not a thing. And my eldest son took out a loan, which we paid him back, and I was still drinking as well. I was like, God knows how I did that. And then a good friend of mine lent me the other half. And today I've transferred the balance. So today I am debt free. As of now.
Amazing.
Congratulations.
That's £36,000 worth of debt, 3-4 holidays a year, car bought for my wife outside, bought and paid for, new van on the drive. The list is endless. It's bizarre, and it's happening to me. And I'll tell you what, if it can happen to me, it can happen to absolutely anybody. And this is what I was saying to my mum today. I said, if I can, you know that one where they all say, Jim Carrey says it, he's an hero, isn't he, Jim Carrey? He's the best. He'll say, if I can do it, anyone can do it. And you think, yeah, whatever. You're going to say that, aren't you? Look at you. But I literally believe if I can do what I've done, if people think that's great, thank you very much. But if I can do it, anyone can do it. Because I was the biggest drinker I've ever known. You know,
I fully believe that, Andrew. And it's something that I'm a big believer of, the fact that, you know, it's not like any of us have been let into some kind of secret. We don't have any particular to take the taker reference. We don't have a particular set of skills. A particular set of sober skills, but I forgot what I was going to say now. We don't have any particular set of skills. We haven't been let into some kind of like secret club. All we decided to do was stop drinking, and I fully believe that if anyone can do it, and anyone is stronger than they ever give themselves credit for. Anyone can do anything they want to. And it's not saying that it's easy, because I know it isn't, but it is absolutely possible. And I think you're a testament to that. And Johnny, you're a real testament to just how much support and belief that you could have in someone to make these huge changes to their life.
Johnny, yeah. How different is your dad? The book that you've written, you say it's not an anti-drinking book. It's just a man who had alcohol in his bloodstream all the time, and now he doesn't. Mm. How different is he?
In terms of actually wanting to do things and having the drive to learn a new skill or get out and exercise, you know, I really do see it all the time. Like when he was younger, just to speak for him, he used to play guitars in bands. That's what made me want to start playing guitar and want to play in bands. And as he got older and he discovered drink and what have you, he stopped doing that as much. And now that he's sober and he has this expendable money and he can treat himself to things, he's bought himself a new guitar and he practices guitar all the time. And it's like, three and a half years ago, I could have never imagined my dad sitting in his room at night trying to sound like Pink Floyd on his guitar. It just wouldn't have happened. Instead, he'd have been asleep on the floor watching Pink Floyd on TV. He wouldn't have been sat there pushing himself to learn this new skill. So, yeah, to get back to your question, it's like the differences are humongous. And, you know, if we want to go and do something, I used to ask him if we could go and there's this band coming over. They're playing in Manchester. Can we get tickets? Not really sure about that. It's on a Saturday night. A busy Saturday night with my friend Al. Whereas now he'll be asking me, can we get tickets for that gig? You know, it's the other way around. He's much more, and I'd probably be tired from work, whereas he's ready to just get out and do it. So the difference really is massive in some respects. In others, he's still just as annoying as he was before.
Cheers, Jimmy.
Okay, just a quick break from this week's episode of The Pod. I quickly wanted to let you know that you can now subscribe to a weekly premium pod. If you wanted just a little bit more Over the Influence coming in your ears every single week, it is unfiltered. It's very funny, if we do say so ourselves, because we don't have to be on our best behaviour as such, because we've got no guests on the premium pod. It is just us, sometimes you, chewing over the alcohol-free fat, and we might surprise you with a community member popping up to share some stuff, or we might even invite you on if you've been in touch to share a booze-free gem with us. It costs less than the price of a swanky coffee for a whole month, and as soon as you subscribe, you will have instant access to a whole back catalogue of premium pod gems full of top tips on how to not just survive your first alcohol-free summer, but how to enjoy it too. There's absolutely loads to go at. You can find us at overtheinfluence.supercast.com. We want to find out a bit more about the process of writing your book together. I know you've done this in lockdown, so it's been, you know, a really difficult 12 months for just about everybody. You two decided to write a book. And I love the fact that sort of stamped on the front of the book, it says, you know, this is not an anti-drinking book, which is brilliant because Over the Influence is not an anti-drinking podcast. If you want to drink, fill your boots, that's fine. But there are quite a few people now, as we are discovering, that want to make changes for whatever reason. It's evident that it has changed your life, Andrew, you know, removing alcohol just over 3 years ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
But in order to get to this point and actually revisit a lot of the more negative, you know, areas of the journey to get you to this point, I imagine it was quite a difficult process for the pair of you at times.
Yeah, just really quickly, Shane, you know, the anti-drinking book, this is not an anti-drinking book. I've found over the last 2 years that I've become, I can't be anti anything. For me to stay in a great place, I can't watch a football team now because I've got to, the rules are, if I follow Burnley, I have to hate Blackburn Rovers. If I follow Blackburn Rovers, I have to hate Burnley. Well, I can't be anti anything. It just doesn't fit with me anymore. So, you know, to be anti anything is me basically sticking my nose into someone else's business. And so the old me was trying to mind everyone else's business. The new me just minds his own business. And actually, in doing so, I'm actually more used to the people whose business I was trying to mind, if that makes any sense to you. And I was only caring. I only wanted to help people and care. I always could be a carer. But you just end up interfering. But the process of writing the book was fantastic because my job was to come up with the titles for the chapters and the basics and make the bullet points. And then Johnny's genius writing which is, I didn't know he had that in him. It's obviously nothing to do with his mum. It's all to do with his dad's decorating skills. It's become so good at writing. So then we did chapters, but the process was a weird one, Sean. From when we did the finance section, we all had Eddie. Christine used to get involved with a lot of the, you know, reading back through the notes and stuff. And we ended up really almost what we're talking about earlier, Ben, we got depressed doing that chapter on the, and we didn't expect it. We weren't looking to be victims of that chapter. It just happened. It was like, I've got Eddie. Yeah. How are you feeling? Oh my God. I feel flipping heck. We'll leave that. So that chapter, Johnny will back this one up, was a really tough chapter to get done because it was, we had to get that one out. It was a damned hard chapter to get out of the way. All the rest were funny and good fun, I guess, but
that's what I was going to say, that middle section, because it really does come like pretty much slap bang in the middle of the book, does the chapter that covers the financial situation and the bankruptcy that my dad mentioned earlier. And there was about a month where I didn't want to write because that was what I had to deal with. And we'd done the notes for it, you know, and our note-taking process was essentially, like my dad says, he would like spend the week making bullet points and then we'd sit down on a Friday night, for example, cup of tea, I'd press record on my phone and we'd just discuss it. I'd make some notes on my laptop, I'd take it away and then spend the week typing that chapter up. Sometimes longer than a week, depending on what the chapter was and how in-depth it was. But this particular chapter, we'd done those notes. Straight away, I had a headache from discussing it. And it's something that I keep saying this, but it's something that I state in the book, is that a lot of the content of the book was, I didn't know before we wrote it. I mean, obviously, I could see what drink was doing to my dad, but the actual details of it, I kind of ignored. I didn't want to know them, you know, growing up. And the financial chapter was that to a T. I knew that we nearly lost the house. I knew my dad had been declared bankrupt. I knew things were bad. But I didn't know to what extent they were bad. I didn't know what these things meant. I don't even think I really knew what bankruptcy were. I just blocked it all out. So to sit down and have these serious conversations with my dad, bearing in mind I've never had a serious conversation with him in my life. Like I say, he's singing songs. He's trying to make up jokes on the spot to try and make me laugh. I can't even drink a cup of tea without him trying to make me laugh. So to sit down and have these really, really deep, serious conversations about such heavy stuff, it was emotional, it was draining, and it really did put me off writing it because I didn't want to get back to that point, you know, like we've covered. Looking back on those dark times, it was like heavy just writing it, like having to think about what my mum and dad were going through. It was just like, I don't know if I can get this across in words, you know, whether I'm typing it or whether I'm talking about it now. It was just really, really hard to do. But then obviously you get past that chapter, like my dad says, we can have a lot of fun with it. You know, there's some of the early chapters about when he first tasted drink and his friend, when he first had a drink, described it as tasting like badger piss. You know, we can put those jokes in. We don't want it to be super dark and super heavy all the time. So as much as there were times where it was hard, really, really difficult to write, at other times it was also an absolute pleasure. But yeah, going into these like deep conversations where that we'd never, you know, it was ground we'd never gone to before, and hearing stories of like his wedding day, where as much as he absolutely loved that day, and not to take away from that, he was absolutely desperate for the photos to end, for the photographer to move on, so he could get in the bar. He was absolutely desperate for it, and you think of your parents getting married, and you just think of like this really, you know, picturesque thing where they're together all day, and it's, you know, and not again, I really don't want to take away, because I know that it's, you know, the best day of their life when they got married, other than when I was born. And to hear stories of like the honeymoon and,
well, just can I just interrupt you there, Johnny? This is mad, this, Sharon. This is I'm talking to you now, Sharon, because you're a wife. You've got a husband. You've got kids, which is fantastic. Imagine being Christine going on honeymoon with your husband, me, right? And you get to Cyprus at 10 o'clock at night, and all I could think about was get me some ale. I am dying for some beer. And Christine, I said to her, let's get to this room, and I'm dying for a bag of crisps. This is no word of a lie. I said, I need some crisps. I'm so hungry after that journey. She said, you know where is love? Well, we got to the bedroom. She started to unpack, and I said, I'll just dip down and just have a look around. We'll see how nice this little hotel is. First night of us honeymoon, this. 1 o'clock in the morning, I stagger back upstairs. I got Pally with the guy behind the bar. Oh, he was a Derby County fan, Cypriot guy, absolutely is. So from 10 till 1, I had a rake of beer and some, possibly one bag of crisps. And then I went back upstairs. Christine's asleep. She woke up. She says, hey, love. I said, it's going to be bloody magic here, you know. It's going to be bloody magic. And we did have a fantastic honeymoon. But when I look back now, I think, oh, my Lord, what on earth? Mm. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with that. If anybody said, can't believe you've just done that, I'd have said, what, enjoyed myself? You think that's out of order? I'm on my honeymoon, I'm enjoying myself. What's so weird? But I would not have seen that as a problem. I'd have seen that as an absolute brilliant idea. And it's weird to look back at that now. That's a true story from the honeymoon, first night. Well, the honeymoon didn't, that was that. That's how the honeymoon panned out, by the way. Legless for 2 weeks.
It's stuff like that that I had no idea of. You know, I didn't realise for how long my dad had had a problem.
I did want to say one thing, guys, and I've been quietly emotional for a lot of this podcast. And I think it is so heartwarming to see the journey you've both been on, the book, the way you're so honest with each other, you make each other laugh so much, and just how far you've come. Obviously, my dad didn't take the responsibility. He didn't want to have that honest discussion, and he didn't want to have the laugh about it. We never got to write the book because he died, and he died because of alcohol. And the fact that you guys have shown that it doesn't have to go that way, and that you can change your life and you can do all these different things. I'm blown away by you both. And like I say, it does make me quite emotional, because I always think, how different would life have been if my dad had taken a similar approach, or maybe I should have taken a different approach and done what Johnny did. But I think it's amazing, guys, and my heart goes out to you, and I am full of admiration and respect for both of you.
Well, thank you very much, Freddie, and I'm very sorry to hear that that's how your father passed away, but it's something that a friend of mine, I won't say his name, but he basically helped with, you know, when I was writing a couple of chapters, I would send them to him, and he would come back to me with his feedback. And he had an addiction problem, not just alcohol, but to a lot of things in general. And when he had his son a few years ago, he realised that he needed to stop that there and then. He checked into rehab, and now he's just over 4 years sober, and his son started school, and it's amazing to see the change that he's made based on the fact that he had his son. And reading the book, as one of the first people to read it, his feedback when he came back was the most incredible thing for him was that he saw how things could have been, you know, if his son had got to 16, 17 and was seeing his dad in that state, he saw what could have been. And and you're absolutely right that we can have a laugh about it, and that we have that connection, me and my dad. You know, we take the piss out of each other constantly. And so we've always had that relationship, but it just so easily can go the other way. We could have so easily not had those conversations and written this book and been truthful with each other and got to the point where it is now.
That's awesome, guys. I think the best thing is it shows it's never too late. And there's always, yeah, if you're still breathing, you're still winning. And there's always an opportunity to turn things around. And I think you both show that it doesn't matter if you've been drinking for years. It doesn't matter if you failed 1,000 times before. All you need to do is get it right once. And I think you guys have shown that you have won the lottery of life. You have hit the jackpot, and it's absolutely awesome.
I'm so sorry to hear of your loss there, Freddie, because I have I get really upset when I hear stories of people passing away through alcohol addiction, because I think as someone who suffered from addiction, I think it's so sad to hear when people pass away, because I realise, and this is just blunt and true, that people like your father and somebody who I know that sadly passed away a few years ago, they don't get the same amount of respect because they could have done something about that. And it's kind of it makes it even sadder for me for somebody to pass away through alcohol, because when they pass away, they get talked about in a different way than somebody who would die normally. Is that fair for me to say, Freddie? Because, it's unbelievably sad, really, really sad.
That's all right. That's what I like to call a Freddie bombshell, just to come in and just drop that and lower the tone. but I think it's, and thanks, guys. And to say it's, that's all been sort of just a part of my life. But I think I always want to take a positive approach, and you do show that it's, change is possible. Anyone can do it. And I think you guys are real testaments to that, that anyone does have the power to change their relationship with alcohol. And it isn't easy, and it's tough, and it's bloody hard, but you've shown that it can be done. And I think you give so much hope and motivation and inspiration to so many people.
Fantastic, Freddie.
Where to start? I mean, it's been a joy to listen to you both. It's been, obviously, you know, pretty much most alcohol-free journeys come with, you know, negativity at the beginning, and it's not all good. But to hear you both now laughing and joking about a lot of it and inspiring, and the place you're in now, Andrew, it's just brilliant. So thank you for sharing it. Thank you for inspiring others. Before you go, just please give your book a massive plug. I know a few of our Zoomers have already read it. Tell us what it's called and tell us where we can find it, please.
So the book's called My Basket Full of Happiness, Why I Called Time on Alcohol. It's under my name, Jonathan Dickin. If you search either of those things, My Basket Full of Happiness or Jonathan Dickin on Amazon, where we're self-published, you'll find the paperback copy, you'll find the ebook copy, whichever preference you've got. We just appreciate the support. The reviews we've had have been absolutely incredible. We've just hit, I think, 60 reviews on Amazon, and they're all absolutely glowing. Yeah, so that's the place to get it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And Andrew, before you go, last word has got to be with you. Now, you can talk a glass eye to sleep. I thought I was bad, Andrew. Oh. You can.
Here, Sharon, I am hearing it. I am.
You can talk a glass eye to sleep. Does everyone understand that on this call apart from me?
Absolutely.
I've never heard that.
I'd never heard it, but I like it.
It's a Lancashire thing. Joking. Andrew gets me.
Oh, of course I do. Well, that's because I've been talking glass eyes to sleep all my life. So of course I understand it.
So, right.
That's what I do for a living.
You see, he hasn't stopped. He's still going on.
Andrew. Sorry, Sharon. Sorry.
No, I'm joking. There's going to be somebody listening now, Andrew, who is where you were. You've been through it all. You've nailed 3 years. How would you sum it up?
I think if you are honest with yourself and you think today that, you know, maybe I could just, I've listened to this lunatic from Barnwell's talking now. Don't be down on yourself. Realize that you're probably a really, really nice person. You've got stuck with a product that you think's really good for you, and it might not be as good for you as you think it possibly is. I realise now that without it, I never imagined my life. I'm born again. I am born again. I've had two lives. I've had, and my second one is brilliant. My first one was great. I spoilt it towards the end, but my second one is absolutely magic, and it just gets better every day. So if you're fancying a change and you want another life, you want to be born again, go for it. You'll absolutely love it. I guarantee you'll love it. Thank you, Sharon. Yeah. And by the way, Sharon, you're brilliant, and so are you, Ben, and so is Freddie. I think what you do with this podcast is incredible. The time and effort you're putting into it, you're wonderful people. You really are wonderful people for caring for people. When you don't have to, you can be doing other things, and it's fantastic. You really are brilliant people.
I completely echo his sentiments as well. And the fact that you've shown interest in our story and our book is, we can never thank you enough.
No, so, fantastic. Yeah. Wonderful.
Hello, this is Ben from Over the Influence, and if you've enjoyed this episode and would love to talk to someone about it, why not get stuck into our discussion forums now at overtheinfluence.co.uk. Our OTI community members are always sharing their thoughts about what they've just heard on the podcast, and it always leads to a brilliant discussion. This is one of the things we absolutely love the most about the OTI community, because it gives everyone a chance to share their thoughts and have their say. Of course, you can talk about anything you like in our forums. We all know how it feels. You go sober, you start feeling the benefits, and you want to shout about how great it feels to the whole world. But your friends or your family don't always want to hear it, especially if they're still drinking. The OTR discussion forums are a place where you can shout as loud as you like and as often as you like about how going alcohol-free is making you feel to a community of people who understand where you're coming from and who share your purpose. Of course, every day isn't brilliant, and this is the place where you can talk about that too. Our members are all at different stages of their own alcohol-free journeys, and one of the best bits about the OTI community is that more established members love sharing their insights, hints and tips with newer members who are just starting out. And obviously, it goes to say that everything you post in the OTI community is completely private. The only people who can see it are people who are just like you, who've also decided to join us. Finally, by becoming an OTI member, you are supporting us and our mission here at Over the Influence to encourage as many people as we can to try giving up alcohol by singing about the joys of sobriety from the rooftops. So, thank you, and I really hope to meet you in our community soon.